Well, hello, all you Lasso fans. This is Peanut Butter and Biscuits, your Ted Lasso fan cast for NPR Illinois Community Voices and the Front Row Network. I'm your host today, Craig, but I'm not joined by Jeremy. I am joined by two wonderful ladies that are going to be walking us through some of the female perspectives to Ted Lasso, because I don't know if you knew this, but Jeremy and I are guys, and we clearly miss so many of the subplots and the sublines and everything else that has to do with the female perspective of Ted Lasso. In fact, we had gotten once an email recently from a listener, and I really appreciate this listener. I should say that in advance before I mention this, but they said, you all need to woman up and you need to get a female perspective on this show. And I, just a little behind the scenes, so you understand why Jeremy and I have been doing a lot more of the reviews by ourselves this year. We've mentioned in the past that we're very lucky to get some screener access from Apple TV Plus. That screener access is getting closer and closer to the release time of Ted Lasso, and so we don't have time to get and request additional access to other people. That's why you're stuck listening to us, but not today, because first we have Tori from Their Soulmates. How are you, Tori?
Hello. Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm so great. We've mentioned you probably on every episode we've done, I think.
You do, and I truly appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of like Ted Becca potential going on here, and you know that, like, who else are we going to mention or talk about but the expert?
Ooh, thank you.
Absolutely. And then the person that really brought, what's that?
I'm an expert in something.
You are, absolutely. I saw your tweet the other day that like 900 accounts have blocked you because of your Ted Becca talk.
Yeah, I mean, I assume that's why, because I've never like said anything mean, and I don't yell at anyone. I usually am pretty passive about the whole thing, but yeah, almost as many followers I have blockers.
That's,
but I take it. Yeah, they're passionate. We have a passionate fan base.
There is a passionate fan base for Ted Lasso, for sure. And then the person that really brought this all together. So this all started, this conversation really started with a tweet that said, and it was from Angie Black, and she just said, hey, I'm ready to do a podcast all about some of the female perspectives, but also my thoughts on the series, because I've really been loving this series and I've got a lot in my brain that I want to get out in a podcast format. And they said, you said, who's willing to do it? And then I responded to you. I will say, no shade to the Lasso cast folks, Kenny Madison, but I know you run that Twitter account and you could have jumped on this too, but no. So Angie, it's so nice to meet you.
Hello.
Because we've only interacted through Twitter, really, and email.
Yes. Hi, I'm Angie Black, and I am a theater nerd. I teach dance and theater, but I also write, and I own an editing business because I love romance books.
That's awesome. That's so cool. And like, you know, it's neat because this whole like fan community that's kind of come together online, for the most part, up to, I would say, some of the criticisms of season three, the fan community on Twitter isn't such a bad spot to be most days. And so it's cool to have these connections and make these connections all throughout. And I'm just really glad to kind of dive into this. What I've told these two in advance is that I kind of hope to just sort of moderate this a bit, or just see where the conversation goes, and that I don't necessarily need to crazy participate too much, because again, you get to hear me yap about this show all the time. And so I really want to hear your perspectives and your thoughts on everything. I should also mention, from a timeline perspective, we are recording this prior to the drop of episode 7. So anything that happens in episode 7, we will not be referencing, because these two haven't seen it yet. And so they will get to see it later on once that episode is released. But let's just dive right into things. So, Angie, you kind of provided us with a bit of an outline or a list of some of the topics that you want to tackle. And I'm just wondering if there's something you thought you could kind of open up with us as your opening salvo into your thoughts on Ted Lasso and everything that's been going on, whether that's in this season or even in the whole series.
Well, I came to Ted Lasso late. I didn't find it until the beginning of season 2. Because no one told me Hampton was in it. And as a theater person that should have been there in, I was blown away by the writing and all of the subversion of tropes, how every time you think something's going to go one way, it's going to be something different. Something as little as what Keely was looking at on her phone when she was alone by herself and Roy walked in, right? I immediately thought it was going to be Jamie because she had just seen Jamie mm-hmm. and it wasn't, it was Roy. And so I started doing a deep dive into it and really studying the writing, the music, which is one of my favorite parts, how well edited it is. Of course, not to alienate anybody, but I am definitely Ted Becca. It's a rom-com.
I should have brought on someone. I should have brought on someone with the opposing viewpoint or something here. We could have had like a crossfire style show.
That's what ours but actually was.
It inspired me. I am in the process of writing a nonfiction book about Ted Lasso, about the craft of it, the writing and everything. So hopefully the next generation can make more good TV like this. But the thing I love the most is that it's really feminist. It's very woman forward. It does woman up, as they say in the show. And most importantly, it's anti-toxic masculinity, which I feel is really important because you don't always see that. Sometimes even if you have a strong woman on a show, like in Annalise Keating or someone like that, you still have all that toxic masculinity. And I feel like this show does a really good job of not doing that.
You know, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I can kind of speak from that a bit from my perspective, but I think Tori, what are your thoughts on sort of just the baseline of this show? We know that, you know, it's kind of famously known that Brett Goldstein, when he went to school, was studying in feminist theory and everything. And so clearly, like, even the people creating this show looked at it from that perspective, and they wanted to make sure that that wasn't something that became a trope, because it's a sports show. I mean, you know, we talk about it, that it's a show about soccer that never talks about soccer, but in the grand scheme of things, there could still be a lot of, you know, the whole idea of toxic masculinity throughout this. And I think that almost is one of the first subversions we had gotten in season one, was the fact that they didn't focus on all of that when they went right into the locker room. But Tori, what are your thoughts on that?
So I also started season one right before season two started. Binged through that. And one of the first things I remember noticing was the Keeley and Rebecca relationship. So like the first time we meet Keeley, you kind of don't know what to make of her. We're so used to seeing this being something where they could compete with each other or not like each other, but it didn't happen. Like these two women from very different generations and both strong women just supported each other and got to know each other. And it was a very different relationship than we're used to seeing between women. And when they threw Sassy in, it was the same, like, okay, now what's going to happen? Someone's going to be jealous. And no one is, you know. And I know Sassy isn't the most liked, at least for the Ted Becca people, but I feel like she is a good friend for Rebecca. You know, I'm sure their dynamic has changed a lot from when they were kids to now, but the two of them just also support each other and aren't jealous about Keeley's friendship or each other. And so it's really refreshing to see.
Well, and you know, I get that, like you were saying, that the Ted Becca folks are not necessarily Sassy's biggest fan, but at the same time, like, I feel like I would think that maybe that has shifted a little bit when we get the scene where Ted's actually asking Sassy on a date and she's talking about how much of a mess he is and that, you know, she just wants to hook up with him and like she doesn't need anything else because she knows he's a mess because she's went through her own divorce and she's went through her own time. And she's like, what she says, she's 3 years on from where he's at now and that he's going to need a lot more time than this. And so I don't know, like I think of her character when she came in and Make Rebecca Great Again. I think that there could have easily been that dynamic where Keeley and Sassy had to fight because they were both Rebecca's best friend, right? Keeley was the new best friend. And then, you know, Sassy is the old best friend that hadn't really talked to Rebecca in about 6 years or so. But there was none of that. There was so much love and support. And in fact, like Keeley just like jumps on her and gives her like a huge hug, like the second that you see her. And so it is cool to see those female relationships and be able to, like, you know, again, seeing this from the guy's perspective, I'm not going to act like I know women in TV very well, but you're right. Like the storylines always seem to be that the girls have to be going for the same guy, or they have to be trying to one up each other, or they have to do something malicious to each other. And this show just, I'm really struggling to see an example or find an example where that's been the case? I mean, does anything come to mind, Angie or Tori, either of you?
Yeah, I think one thing really in particular that strikes me is that Sassy builds Rebecca up when she's not around. And you don't usually mm-hmm. see that. You see a lot of backstabbing or somebody's super nice to their face. And then when they turn around, they're like, ooh, she doesn't. She calls Rebecca on the stuff that maybe she needs to work on. And she builds her up to her face and behind her back. And I love that so much because it shows that their relationship is actually true, right? The relationships on this show are what you get. It isn't like they're to your face. I think that's why so many people had such a strong reaction to Nate, because he was still kind of acting one way and then, whoa, it was something totally different.
Yeah.
But definitely with Sassy, Keely, and Rebecca, they are, I mean, I thought the same thing. I was like, oh, here we go. Here's where they're going to throw that in. But it wasn't like that.
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. Sassy often hugs Keely before she even hugs Rebecca now when the three of them are together on screen. And I think it's really important that they continue to build each other up when they're not around each other. I know. I mean, I guess people don't like Sassy. Maybe I enjoy her a lot. I'm sure it's partly because of the actress, but I love what they've done with her character. And I really love that she, in a weird way, is everybody's cheerleader. She tells Rebecca how great Ted is. And she tells Keely how great Rebecca is. And she, you know, tells Rebecca, hey, maybe look in the mirror with this a little bit, but it's always with love. And I really enjoy that about her character. It's not something you see very often.
The only thing we've seen so far that I noticed about the typical relationship is Shandy. But I think they did that purposely because mm-hmm. we saw this mentorship and closeness with Rebecca when Rebecca didn't really know Keely's background. She had a good feeling for her, and Keely has a good head on her shoulders, so it worked out. But when Shandy tried to do the same thing, maybe just her picker's a little off, because you know they have similar backgrounds. It could have gone either way. I mean, Shandy could have been a Keely, but instead she went full Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, she was very much an agent of chaos, right? I mean, I think that she is almost, and maybe that's why, you know, I've commented the fact that, and it's nothing. I think that the actress does a wonderful job of portraying Shandy. It's just, I wasn't super into that character. Jeremy still thinks, I'll get your opinions. Jeremy thinks we've seen the last of Shandy. And again, you all haven't seen episode 7. I've not seen anything beyond episode 7. So we certainly don't know. But what are your thoughts? Do you think that that's a character that they're going to actually end up bringing back on the screen? Because I think there's some unresolved anger there. He thinks it's more of like an Edwin Akufu situation where, you know, the storming out happens and that's it. But Tori, do you think that we get more Shandy in season 3 before it wraps?
I could see it go either way. Like, even if it's just a little something, we see her in the stands, like in a West Ham jersey or something. Like, I could see them bringing her back just for some other kind of shock value. But you're right, the Edwin Akufu, you know, there was nothing that could come back from that tantrum that wasn't going to, that was going to be better than that. So I can never put anything past this show, but I'm not sure we'll see her again.
Okay. Yeah. See, I'm still thinking, I'm in that like mode where for some reason, I think that her conversation during the banter promo, I understand fully that right now at this moment, Jack and Keely are very much a thing and it seems like they're good for each other. But the way that this show has been playing up the Jamie angle so much when it comes to Keely, I just feel like that's an unresolved relationship that perhaps we're going to get more of at some point in this season. And I think Shandy is going to play into that, because during the banter promo, you know, she just kind of just says like, hey, I just want to know if I can bang him. And, you know, it's after Keely has this kind of elegant way of just saying like, you know, Jamie's changed and, you know, he's clearly a more grown person and all of this. And so I don't know, like, I just don't think you get that scene without any kind of additional payoff. But Angie, yeah, what do you think? Do you think we get Shandy back?
I think Shandy comes back. I think so. The show has been really great about giving all the females their own agency, right? Whether it be in business, in their own sexuality, and who they date, don't date. I really enjoy the Sassy Ted relationship and the fact that it is just a physical relationship. It doesn't have to have feelings, right? Women relationships on TV always have to have feelings. I think that was so great about Rebecca's Sunflower episode, is that it didn't have sex in it, but it was still this connection, right? Normally, because the gratification is, well, you have to give your body. And it showed Rebecca that she was worth more than her job or her body. It was who she is, right? It like encapsulated all of that. But I think that we see Shandy back because Keely hasn't had the business agency yet. I feel like she got a little empowerment by finally standing up to Shandy and firing her. But I think that's very unresolved. And I definitely think that Keely is not over Jamie or Roy in different ways, right? And I don't know that Jack's here to stay either. I kind of think that Jack is Keely's sassy. It's her bridge to possibly get back with Roy, or possibly just be the independent woman, right? That's who Keely's been the whole time. Keely, independent woman. there's lots of speculation about who Ted and Rebecca and if Roy and Keely will get together, but I think there's a real possibility that Keely just is Keely and that's just what she does. So I think Shandy's going to play into all of that. I'm wondering if Shandy comes back to kind of tell everybody about Keely and Jack, because there is that Keely works for Jack type of thing we had with Rebecca and Sam, which is a little, oh, what's happening there? But I definitely don't think we've seen the last of her.
Workplace romances, right? All abound in this show. And then also don't forget some ethical boundaries between therapists and former patients as well. But
that breaks my heart. That whole storyline breaks my heart.
I know if we don't leave this conversation, like we cannot leave this conversation until we talk a lot about Michelle, because like, I think that's a character that has, you know, a very broad difference of opinions on both sides of sort of her character and how that's been progressing throughout this series. But I don't want to cut this conversation off at all. And it's just, it's really, I think, interesting because so many people have these preconceived notions of what they think will be like the best relationships for so many of these women in the show. And I mean, the fact of the matter is, it could be that maybe the best relationship is that they're not in a relationship at the end of this show. And I know that we're not necessarily, I don't want to like immediately jump on the Ted Becca train here, Tori. So, but you know, I'm just thinking that, like you said, Angie, Keely mentions that she is this independent person. She's kind of went off on her own. She started her own business. We find out, we assume at the beginning of season three, at least I did, that at the end of season two, because Roy invites her on that trip and she decides that she's not going to go, that you assume the breakup's going to happen where Keely breaks up with Roy. And then clearly we're told that it happened the other way around. And so that, I think, is also another subversion of what our expectations were as far as that relationship is concerned. But man, this show, it's like they have good writers or something.
I know. It's crazy. I think that, I mean, I know we're talking about the women on the show, but that is not the only feministic thing about the show, right? It's men being super vulnerable, which you don't usually see. It is Roy being the insecure one, even though he's like this tough footballer who doesn't ever smile. He's, you know, I mean, they are the grumpy sunshine trope, and yet he's the one who breaks up with Herb, so he doesn't get left. You just don't see that. That scene where he opens up to Trent Krim, and he's like, look at this thing I've kept in my wallet for 30 years. You did this and it hurt my feelings. And then Trent gets to say, sorry. You just don't get to see that kind of thing. The elegance and kindness that they're treating the Colin storyline and Trent, especially in Sunflowers where they're together in the pink triangle, just all of that. The fact that it's not a big deal to Roy or Jamie that now Keely has a girlfriend. A statement. It was just one statement, which is really nice, but that's part of feminism, right? Not expecting everybody to be straight, just expecting everybody to be who they are. And that's something that this show does really well, right? They don't have to hit you over the head with it because it's just what it is. And every single relationship is like that. Roy's allowed to have feelings where in a normal show, he wouldn't. We would never see anything but a wooden soldier probably, right? Ted is not going to make a Bob Fosse reference 10 minutes into the first show and be a successful football coach. Right? And Beard's not going to get it. They're not going to all have a conversation about Mary Poppins in their office in a normal show. It's just this lovely dichotomy of how you wish things really were. And maybe we'll get closer to that because of things like this.
Even the whole episode that was like a love letter to rom-coms, like mm-hmm. every,
yes.
not one guy said, oh, I don't watch rom-coms, or, you know, they all had their favorites. Sam's mentioned that, you know, sometimes he likes to take a bath instead of a shower. Just even little things like that, where you don't ever hear anyone saying that someone's playing like a girl. I love the introduction of Shannon into his life also, because he's seeing, you know, women trying to play football and what that would mean for her as an adult, and it's definitely getting better. So when the hug happened in the locker room after Jamie's father, and you aren't really sure what Roy's going to do, neither is Jamie, but it was so wonderful to see that kind of emotion in men and hugging each other and not being awkward about it. So,
yeah. And I mean, we tied that so much to the idea of fatherhood, but you're also right. It's talking about this idea of vulnerability. And I mean, I'll tell you, like, after that scene happened, we participated in LassoCon and stuff like that. And we were asked to do our favorite Tedisms. And that was, I think, my favorite Tedism. And it still is to this day, is that hug. It was that physical, yeah. like just Roy grasping Jamie when he needed it, after like where that character came from. But you're right. There's so many different things that this show does, like Woman Up. Also, mm-hmm. you know, God has been represented with a manicure and, you know, like God's always referenced as a woman, and like that, you know, that's not the first time that that's happened. Alanis Morissette was God in Dogma for Kevin Smith. Right. But still, it's kind of cool that, like, even beyond just the female characters, which you could probably argue, I mean, in this show, it is still a show that's dominated by male characters. Granted, it is about a football team, it's a male football team, but, like, you know, I still think that they find different ways to try to get through some of the standard tropes that men have to be these jocks. I don't really know that there's necessarily anyone on the pitch that you would say is a standard jock. I think maybe, you know, Mo Judy Lamore's character, Van Damme, comes off a little bit worse for the wear after his live sex shows in the Netherlands. But, you know, beyond that, like, I just think that I think that they've done a really good job of showing all these characters having some bit of vulnerability. And I think that that really goes back to the idea that I knew going into season two, they'd have to mention the name Brené Brown, and they did in the series, because she became such a huge advocate and such a huge fan. And she's been out there for years talking about ideas of vulnerability and weaving that into the show. And I think as a dude, that allows for, you know, people like me who are a more emotional guy to, like, hopefully that becomes more of the norm. You know what I mean? Like, hopefully that allows for people to be more open. I certainly think that as a dad, it's a much better, I'm growing up in a much better generation. And this isn't, my dad is amazing. But like, if you think about every subsequent generation of fathers, there was a different role to be played by dads, right? Mm-hmm. And so much more now, we are not only an active part of our children's lives, but we're expected to be. And we are, in a way, even something like as silly as paternity leave. I think I was like the second guy to take paternity leave at my work, like, ever.
Yeah.
And it's like, that was back in 2015, you know? So still some progress to be made there, but I think it is nice to see some of this kind of represented on a TV show as well.
Go ahead, Tori.
I was going to say, even, you know, the idea of when you have two working parents and a child gets sick at school, it's always expected that the mom is going to pick that child up and do this stuff. So it's so wonderful to see a show that really, I mean, obviously Ted is long distance right now, but even being long distance, he is so involved in Henry's life. So you know that he was the type of dad that was very hands-on.
But they also called him first when Henry forgot his lunch for the field trip. they called.
Oh, that is a good
they
point.
Called yeah. Ted, and he said, I work in London. And then Michelle was pulling up. So even just right. little tiny little things like that, they just flip it just enough.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So where do we want to go in terms of characters next? So we've talked a little bit about some of the relationships, particularly Keeley's relationships. We've also talked a bit about some of the guys that are involved in this show as well and where their vulnerabilities lie. But maybe we circle back to Michelle. And then yeah. I think we could maybe discuss the biggie. We'll save that for last here. We'll make the listeners have to wait for some Ted Becca talk before we get out of here. But let's talk about Michelle, because she's an interesting character. You know, I've been on record. I've very much always been in Michelle's corner, because the way that she proceeded, Tan Lines has always been my favorite episode. And seeing her heartbreak in realizing that she can't make this work, and then it's really Ted that opens up that dialogue at the end, but certainly she's a major part of where he goes, you know, you just don't have to try anymore. It's okay. Like, mm-hmm. And it, whether it be just the hopeless optimism of trying to live with Ted Lasso or whatever else was going on, maybe there was something with Dr. Jake, who knows, but like, it's just like the idea that she really tried not only for Ted, but also for Henry, in that situation, and then continues to be supportive of Ted, you know, continues to send him these messages before matches. And I know that the phone call answer was awkward and people really didn't like that. They felt very negative against Michelle, but she had no clue that Ted was going to be calling the landline, you know, like yeah. there's not like, I don't think that you can kind of place that on her, but I'd love to get your perspectives on Michelle, and I'll go to Angie first on this, but what are your thoughts about her as a character? Because clearly she's going to be coming back at the end, but before the end of this show, I think that is, you know, write that down and with ink that she will be making more appearances here. But what are your thoughts on Michelle Lasso? Well,
and, I know
not
that
not Michelle Lasso that, anymore. Michelle Kenner,
I think, or Keller.
Yeah,
I think maybe. Yeah.
All of our listeners are yelling at us right now. So
I know,
sorry.
They all are.
Michelle.
My friends are like, I can't believe you don't know that, Angie.
Yeah, Michelle K.
First, I think that something that's really important on the show also is that nobody speaks badly about their spouses, significant other, anything that Ted does as a dad, anything that Roy does with Phoebe, anything like that. None of those relationships where the men are kind of breaking out of quote unquote the traditional roles are looked down on by their friends. Like, they're not made fun of for it. I think that's first very important. Secondly, having said that, in relationship to Michelle, I know that a lot of fans don't like her. And how could you leave Ted Lasso? Well, I think if you lived with someone like that, I'm sure it wears on you, right? Until literally three episodes ago, Ted has not opened up. Even after Rebecca said Oklahoma, he gave her a Tedism, not a real answer. He didn't say what was happening. I think Michelle should get more credit than she does, because she is just trying to co-parent with him now. He is in a completely different country. I'm sure Henry has moments where he really misses his dad and all of those things. I think it was a detriment to her character that she's dating Dr. Jacob, as far as how people feel about her and whatnot. But I think she's a good character. I think she hasn't been mean to Ted. She hasn't said anything bad. She still texts him and says good luck with the game. She's clearly very present in Henry's life, and she's doing that all by herself now, right? She doesn't have weekends off to possibly start a new relationship or anything like that. She doesn't have a 3-on-4-off or whatever the custody relationship would be if Ted was in Kansas with her. That's a very different thing, right? And also, even though she wanted out of the marriage, it's hard. I mean, I was divorced, and I had a relationship very similar to Rebecca and Rupert's relationship. Even when you want out, it's hard when you're in that house alone, right? Those first few nights, it's real quiet. It's all the things. And I think that people aren't looking at that side, right? Because Michelle feels removed from the Ted Lasso universe. She's not in very many episodes. Her vibe is very opposite from the characters that you have. I think they did make an interesting choice of Dr. Jacob being goofy and being in a banana suit and being silly like Ted. I think there's a lot of stuff we didn't see, right? And that's kind of the point. You don't always know what's happening in a relationship. You only see the stuff people want you to see. Yeah. Also, do we think Ted has a drinking problem? do we think there's been kind of little hints here and there? He decided to set down the whiskey to talk to Michelle instead, right? He got water. I think that was a very big moment.
Well, you know, they say that you never know what's really going on in a relationship except for the two people in it. Mm-hmm. And we've seen, so there was the incident when Nate came to slide the paper under his door and Ted was a little drunk and he was pretty mean to Nate. And it was a very different side to see of him. When he started therapy, we saw a very different side to Ted. So we don't know when Michelle says his constant optimism was crushing. We don't know that that necessarily meant because he's a sweet guy and happy. It's the fact that he had been bottling everything up and pretending everything was fine, which is why I think that look on her face after his phone call, the Zoom call, is he finally said it. Like, you know, who knows if he had started this journey 7 years ago, could they have still been together? Maybe she fell out of love and it doesn't matter, but you know, he is doing work on himself to make himself better for the next partner, even though he would have been, you know, what we think of now seeing Ted as like, well, he would be a perfect partner. You know, he's going to do all these sweet things, but he wasn't. Well,
he's our protagonist, right? Like, I mean, we're going to like, we put him up on a pedestal. And like you said, we don't necessarily see some of the flaws. Although I think that we can all admit that like this whole journey Ted's been on about therapy in particular shows that he does have flaws. He does have this idea where he's kind of set in his own ways and he's unwilling to explore that. Now, the Dr. Jacob thing makes that a little bit because he of course mentioned him in season two and we've learned more about that relationship that he had with her therapist. And so like, you know, that does complicate, of course, you know, I might have a negative outlook on therapy as well, given the same circumstances. Right. Mm-hmm. But certainly it's nice to humanize Ted a little bit. And I think that you bring up an excellent point there, Tori, because there was a lot of discussion after that phone call and wondering like, you know, is he going to go back to Kansas and they're going to get back together? Right, I can't imagine that is even a possibility in my mind. And maybe that's someone from, you know, I'm going through a lot myself personally and kind of living through that now. And I don't see that as being an outcome that is something that we're going to like necessarily jump on in the end of season three here. So yeah. I think there's a lot of other potential paths for Ted and certainly one of those that we should probably go ahead and dive into a little bit now. Right. So.
Oh boy.
Just one more thing about.
Oh yeah. Go ahead, Angie.
Ted Michelle thing. You know, they talk a lot about don't let somebody's past muck around with your future. Right. Mm-hmm. Ted's really good at reading people. I mean, I kind of think maybe the reason he never liked Dr. Jacob was because he might have seen something between him and Michelle. And I think that phone call was him kind of saying, hey, that was in the past. I'm doing the work now. I finally hear what you're saying. Like he might have seen that and couldn't listen then either, right? But the distance gave him that. And I think that's what her smile was about is too. Because I still think she roots for Ted. I don't think it's that she doesn't care about him, right? She just doesn't want to be married to him. Absolutely. And there's a very big thing in our society, right? If your marriage doesn't work out, you've failed, which I don't believe is true in any way, because sometimes people just go in different paths and that's how it is. And it's just one of those social constructs that everybody thinks we need to adhere to, which is kind of nonsense at the end of the day. And I think through that lens, it's very progressive in that yeah, they're getting along and they're friends and they're not going to fight. And there isn't this big knockdown drag out, but we're so conditioned to only see it one way that when people saw her smile, they were like, oh, well, they're back together.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the trope, right? I mean, like that's the potential. And again, like when has this show ever chose to go that route? You know, I just, and like, if anybody thinks, you know, what's going to happen at the end of season three, you know, there might be that person that gets like the perfect bracket on, you know, on March Madness and just like out of luck or whatever, but we don't know what's going to end up happening. And maybe they're going to make a decision that's going to enrage some people and other people are going to be very happy about it. Really just depends on what was in Jason's brain. And you know, the thing is too, even going back to those reports that ended up in Vulture during filming and why things were a little bit more delayed, mm-hmm. you know, they had confirmed reports that they went back and they were going to do some rewrites and some massive rewrites of the season, because I can't imagine the amount of pressure that Jason feels when he's putting together this show and those writers feel, because there's such an expectation. This show has become so much more than the show. This show has become, in a way, it's become this mantra. It's become this thing that people really rally to. And then I think that's why in Signs, we see him rip up the believe sign, because that's a very, again, like I've mentioned that so much meta-ness in this season back to fans when they were singing Don't Worry About a Thing at the mm-hmm. end of Sunflowers. I think that they meant that to the fans, you know, to say like, we got this. Yeah. And you know, you might not be 100% pleased, but we're doing our best here. And I really appreciate that. But now it's time. We have at least a few more minutes here to start to discuss Ted Becca. And I should just bow out of this conversation, I feel like, and you two should take it from here. But I should say that if you want to hear lots about the Ted Becca relationship, you absolutely should go listen to their Soulmates. And so with that nice plug, I'm going to turn it over to Tori and tell us about where you're at season three right now, end of episode six. We just had the Floating Dutchman, right?
Yeah.
He was the Flying Dutchman. He was an Air Force man. He was a good ship in the night. That is what I'm going with. It was necessary for Rebecca, but now we're back on course.
Yeah, I feel like we are still going in that direction for sure, but just at a snail's pace. But also the fact that we possibly have 6 hours left, because the shows have been so long, you can do a lot in 6 hours, especially if you can do a lot in an hour and a half movie. So I'm feeling good about it. But there, I do have my moments, I can't lie, where I'm like, am I the confused one? But I don't think so. I think we're headed there.
Well, all right. Jason said right away, what if Nora Ephron wrote a sports movie? And it's very much following the path of When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah.
So
there's been, I mean, there's a lot of like tidbits out there, and certainly, you know, people were talking about Jason or Ted. I do that thing where I always refer to the characters as their actors. But where Ted was texting Rebecca and really like looking for that support, because that's the type of support that they've come back to. And people were kind of brushing that off a little bit, I feel like, at the end of last episode. But I really see this. I mean, you can kind of see Ted opening up more to Rebecca. And I think even in the facial expressions, I'm starting to see more of a connection there. But maybe maybe it's because Tori's just completely brainwashed me here. I don't know.
As she should.
Yeah, this is like, you know, I'll tell you, I ended up around Tori one weekend. It was like Clockwork Orange. I just had to keep with my eyes open and just watching just Ted and Rebecca scenes for a few hours. So I've been conditioned now.
I had a PowerPoint. I listen to their
Soulmates every week, and my husband will walk by and I'll be like, see, someone else thinks what I think. See?
Thank you. Yeah.
They're doing this little theater trick where you have two outcomes for your character, but you only want the audience to pick one, right? And so you give little hints of the outcome you want, even when they're not on stage together. And I'm sorry, every scene that Rebecca's in is about Ted. I don't know what else to tell people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of cross-pollination going on amongst their storylines. And of course there are two leads, so that totally makes sense as well. But I don't know, guys, it's starting to look, and Luke, you know, we did talk to Luke Tenney last week, and he's very team Ted Becca, but he was saying that there might not be enough time left. And that's kind of what you were getting at too, right, Tori? Like, we're running out of time here a little bit, although we still don't know necessarily the future of the show. We know that this is the end of the arc, though. And so you would think that if that was the culmination of the arc, that would happen in the third season. Certainly, we are all hoping for more Lasso, or at least a spinoff or something else, whatever the case may be. But yeah, you know, it's starting to get down to the wire.
I think with the way the fandom is split too on this, like, even though he's showing us which direction he wants us to go in and hoping we're going to pick one, like, it's like such a split between like, some people are really not going to have any idea where this came from, and then some people will say, you know, oh, I saw it from the beginning. So my worry is that if we let it get all the way to the end and we have, you know, an ending like While You Were Sleeping, where you just see that they're married and then they kiss, and you never, we saw them interact. But the thing about When Harry Met Sally that I love so much is, you know, why they fell in love. I want to know what makes Ted and Rebecca fall in love with each other, if that is what happens. And I really want to see them at least in the same room for like 2 minutes by themselves. A Biscuits with the Boss would be great, because I feel like we've gotten so disconnected from what they were building in season one that I'm worried that if they don't get them together and we see them, why they love each other, that people are going to really think that it came out of nowhere.
Ah, but we are 2 episodes away from episode 9, which both episode 9s in season 1 and in season 2, we get very epic scenes between Hannah and Jason, usually in Jason's office. And he said at the end of season 2, he said, I'll see you back again this time next year. So we know that there's going to be some scene between the two of them. I mean, I would predict that. Like, I'd state that in ink again, like, that there's going to be some monumental scene. It's likely going to happen in episode 9, just because that's what the show's been following. So,
and after that's, they get together, Ted's in the kitchen and Rebecca's mom comes in, and instead of saying, will there be biscuits with that, he hands her biscuits he just made in Rebecca's kitchen. Come on, writers, just one little scene like that. That's all I need. Seriously, though, I really love how they're, I suspect it will be, we will see why they fell in love. I think the end of the series is Ted going back to Kansas to be with Henry. I mean, I can't see another ending for it, as much as I want them to run off in the sunset together. The sunset's in Kansas. but it probably will be something at the very end. But I can't imagine that these writers wouldn't show us them falling in love, and maybe the epiphany is they are in love with each other, but how can they make it work? And that's what they have to reconcile. I don't really know how it all play out, but I agree. Episode 9 is kind of where I'm looking. I jokingly said that maybe the last episode will be a full movie for us, because every episode's getting better.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, as a recap podcaster, our episodes have certainly gotten longer. So I prepped everything for episode 7, and I sent it to Jeremy, and I was just like, buckle in, buddy. It's going to be another late night.
There's a real possibility with the agency this show gives every character that maybe nobody's coupled off at the end.
Yeah, that's you know, like, that's absolutely something that we could be heading towards. Although I think that leaves a little bit something to be desired. I'll tell you, it's funny. It seems like there's such this massive split on Ted Becca, and people are extremely passionate on both sides. Of that.
I've never been part of a fandom before, and it is wild.
It is wild, right? But
wild.
Like, and Tori's out there being kind and being very curious and not judgmental when it comes to these people. But I will say that the relationship that I find is very interesting, because to me, it's like 90-10 or 95-5 is everyone wants to see, to kind of circle back to what we talked about at the beginning, everybody wants to see Roy and Keeley back together. And it's like, that almost seems universal that everybody mm-hmm. wants that. So it's interesting that one relationship is so polarizing. And then the next relationship just adjacent to that is like, everybody is so on board and that's what they want out of this. Mm-hmm. And so I just think interesting.
Yeah, I find that very curious as to why that is. Because if you ask people who don't want Ted and Rebecca together, the first thing they'll tell you is why can't two people just be platonic friends? Why does somebody always have to be in a relationship on a show? Okay, but all they're rooting for is Roy and Keeley to get back together, right? Like, it feels like it feels just very opposing view. And it's usually the same people who really want Roy and Keeley to be a couple.
I think
that don't want them together.
That, and I think that's the familiar couple that we are used to on screen. And like, if I see anyone being single at the end of this, as much as I also love Roy and Keeley, and I want them to be together. And I personally think they're a good match in addition to all of the great chemistry that they have. But Keeley just may not be ready for Roy. She's a bit younger. She's still trying to figure herself out. So I could see her being single at the end, where someone more like Rebecca, I would see her. It's something that she's told us that she wants. So I don't know at her stage in life that they would. But yeah, I think people aren't used to seeing couples like Ted and Rebecca on TV. So I think Roy and Keeley is more familiar to us, and they're fabulous also. So
yes.
Now,
I mean, Rebecca said from the beginning, she wants a relationship. She wants a family. I don't see where that's coming out of left field for anyone. That's definitely part of her journey, and it has been the whole time.
Speaking of a family and relationships and everything else, I do want to, we didn't talk a lot about Tish's predictions and her thoughts in Sunflowers. And I did get a little bit of pushback for that. But, you know, especially the, like, Rebecca being upside down and wet and, you know, seeing the daughter's room, seeing all of these different signs, these premonitions kind of coming true. Where do you think all of that is heading in the last part of this season? And then I want to make sure too, to leave you a little bit of time to just kind of wrap up any final thoughts that you have before we get out of here, but maybe kind of like a rapid fire here. What do you think about Tish's premonitions and where that's going to be heading? And I'll go to Tori first.
Okay. I have two scenarios. One is that we just needed to see them come true, and we needed Rebecca to see them come true so that we know that is going to end with the fourth prediction. Or they're going to be done again in a different way. And the only reason I started thinking that too is the book that he was writing down all of his stuff in is kind of a green matchbook now. So I was like, wait, are they going to bring them all back again? And they're all going to mean Ted in a completely different way. So I don't know. Those are my predictions as to one of those.
Perfect. Perfect.
That's Angie, what about you? I think as well. I think they're going to do them all again. And they're all going to be very explicitly Ted. Because all the other times we saw those things, the matchbook, Ted was there at the restaurant. And when we see it again, the pink biscuit boxes behind it. When she runs into John Wings Night, what a great name. You can see Ted on his scarf, like the way United is like,
yeah, I didn't
like,
catch that. That was a good catch.
Ridiculous. I love it. And also she talked about thunder and lightning and the rest of the prediction. There was no thunder. It wasn't raining. I mean, she did get dunked in the water, but I think that, I agree with you, Tori, that they're all going to be again. I find it very interesting that Colin said he got sick on pickled herring, right? A red herring, kind of everything up to that point. And then literally moments later, Rebecca's in the canal meeting the Dutchman. And just, we all know nothing's by accident on this show, right? So like Colin not wanting to learn anything, and he's the one who learned the most. I definitely think I agree with you that we'll either see them again in some form, the real form, or Rebecca just had to get to a point where she believed, right? I mean,
you think she still believes now after the news she got from the doctor? I was trying to figure that out.
I think
what was the news she got from the doctor, though? I mean, like, because, you know, like, yes, it's very clear that to me that she was told that she couldn't have children. Like, that's how it reads on her face, everything else. Mm-hmm. But they never confirmed that. You know what I mean? And like, again, in a show that's true, so willing to subvert things, I just don't know if maybe her kind of like melancholiness was the fact that she was told, yes, you can have children, but by the way, you don't have that partner. You don't have that situation where you can't, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I just, I couldn't read it. You know, like Hannah does such a good job in like basically towing the line and just being like, oh no, that, you know, that makes sense. It's what I expected. Like, but yeah, what was it that she expected?
I took it as that it was news that she would not, most likely not be able to conceive. Because even if it had been good news, but she doesn't have a partner, I don't know that she would have been that melancholy, because you went into it. That was best case scenario, was finding out that you could conceive, even though she doesn't have a partner.
Yeah.
I agree. Okay. I took it as she couldn't have children. I know there's been lots of discourse about what the Dutchman said at the end, like, oh, did we? But I can't even believe that anyone would think that this show would go that storyline of like, now Rebecca's going to wake up pregnant after her little encounter.
Yeah. I think
that's so far left field and exactly the opposite of everything we've talked about today, right? That would be the opposite of empowering and all of those things.
I just feel like because this episode is coming out this weekend, I should probably just go ahead and tell you that that's not happening. So,
yeah, I can't imagine that it would.
Anything from your future viewings, but
I don't think that we'll see the Dutchman again. I think that was just a one-time thing.
She needed
somebody else to tell her that Rupert didn't happen to her, it happened for her. She needed someone to see her for everything she was without football, without her team around her, without her money. He didn't know, right? I mean, he threw her coat in the dryer, which I guess somebody did research, you can, but like, he doesn't know who she is, right? She needed that night of someone just to be like, you're worth this and you deserve it.
Yeah. All right, so let's go ahead and do some final thoughts here, because I definitely want to close out on whatever you would like to talk about before we wrap up. But and we'll go to Angie first, because you're sort of the one that brought us all together here today. So any final thoughts before we start to wrap this show up and do our plugs?
I am so excited to see where this season goes. And I never trusted writers like I trust the writers on this show before to just give us exactly what we need, right? Just like Three Little Birds, everything will be all right.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think this show's so incredible. And the fact that we can sit here and talk for an hour and it can open up these conversations about all of these different things, it's doing what it's supposed to, right? That's what all good art does. It opens you up and says, hey, something's usually like this. This is different. This mm-hmm. is better. Maybe we should work for this. I mean, I can't remember ever a TV show wanting myself to be a better person. And I feel like I am, with no hyperbole, because of this show. There's choices I make every day and I think, maybe I shouldn't do that or whatever. It's definitely made me a better teacher, you know, watching Ted coach and stuff like that. So I can't wait to see where it goes.
Yeah. I also feel that you know, my whole approach with Twitter, where I have been known to get into one or two Twitter fights years ago.
What?
But now, if I see some injustice, but now I'm just like, you know, I'm just going to try to put my best foot forward and let this roll off my back. But with that said, as much as I love this show, it's going to give me an ulcer by the time it is done. It's so stressful now. Probably because the stakes are so high, but I just can't wait to see where everyone's storyline goes. And I have a feeling that this will be the final season, so it'll be bittersweet.
And just wait until May 31st and all answers will be revealed, right? Yes. So we're excited about that. But we're also, you know, not necessarily looking forward to everything coming to an end here. But I'll tell you, Angie, holy moly, thanks for reaching out on Twitter, because, you know,
oh my gosh, we'll thank be excited. You for having me.
Once our show ends, we'll be excited to be listening to your podcast where you go back and retrospectively look at everything else too. But then I do want to make sure that our listeners go and check out their soulmates. Kevin and Tori do such a great job of breaking down that relationship, but also the show in general. And they provide so many great insights that I love to listen to. So Tori, please tell them where to find your show.
Thank you. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, pretty much wherever you get podcasts. And you Excellent. Can yell at me on Twitter if you want.
Yes. They're soulmates on Twitter, right?
Ted Becca Pod.
Yeah. Ted Becca Podcast. Okay. Sorry. I knew that.
No, I should have said it. I'm sorry.
That's okay. They would find you on Twitter, I'm sure, if they just search for Ted Becca.
Oh, right? Yeah, probably. Unless they've already blocked me and now they've changed their mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we haven't blocked you, Tori. So also, I want to make sure that our listeners know to follow along with us at PDBFRN. Also, both of these two are in our private Facebook group. So we're going to continue the conversation in there this weekend. So make sure you jump on to Peanut Butter and Biscuits for the private Facebook group there. I want to say, and I think we're probably going to talk, I'm recording this before I record with Jeremy. Our episodes have been getting more and more downloads and just more and more people have been joining that Facebook group. And just thank you from the bottom of my heart to all of you for giving us a listen and for checking out the show. It means an awful lot that these, you know, a couple of Midwesterners that talk about this show, that you listen to us. And we love to hear from you. So make sure you email us at frontrowlasso@gmail.com or just reach out, because we're always here to listen as well. So that's it for me. I'm going to be back again next week with episode 8 of 12. We're coming towards the end here, guys. I don't know how I feel about it at all, but this has been a really insightful conversation. And I'm so fortunate to have been joined by these two ladies today to talk all about this and moving forward with the show for sure. So for Peanut Butter and Biscuits, I'm Craig.
I'm Tori.
I'm Angie.
And as always, be a goldfish.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio Illinois. For more from the Front Row Network, including our articles or our other dozens of shows, visit thefrontrownetwork.com or nprillinois.org/programs/frontrownetwork. You can also find us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, and on Twitter @FrontRowReviews with a Z.